Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Writership Podcast. Today, we're talking about intentional sentence construction. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Liz Green. Liz is the first officer of the Writership crew and the ghostwriter behind Green Ghost Ghostwriting. She helps entrepreneurs write books that build their businesses. To learn more about the podcast, visit writership.com/podcast.
As you know, the podcast is sponsored by Jim Cookrell from the Author Marketing Club. Jim just launched his new service for authors called Happy Book Reviews. We all know that books with a more high-quality reviews sell more copies. HappyBookReviews.com is a service where Jim hopes to make your book happy with reviews. Check out the options at www.happybookreviews.com because nobody likes a sad book. You can make your book happy with reviews.
All right. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks, Lisa.
Liz is here with us today if you follow Clark outside of the podcast, you've probably heard that he's struggling with health challenges that stem from the time when he served in Iraq. And it's gotten to the point where he needs an extended break. So he's not going to be appearing on the podcast for a while. And I'm sad to see him, you know, not see him regularly for the recording, as much as I know you'll all miss him. He's a friend as well as a co-host. So I hope you'll keep him in your thoughts and prayers as he takes some time to focus on his health. And I'll share updates so y'all know how he's doing as I'm able to do that. So over the next while, I'll be inviting some other editors and authors and guests to join me as well. And I appreciate your patience as I'm trying to figure this out. And right now, for the first time, we have Liz, the fabulous Yay. Liz.
I like that. I'm going to make that my proper title.
Oh, good. Good. Well, everyone's going to fall in love with your accent, I know. But also, Liz is the amazing person behind so many of the cool things that happen here at Writership. And when things go smoothly, it's often because Liz is taking care of it.
Liz hasn't messed up.
Oh, not even close. So welcome.
Thank you.
So we have a new Patreon supporter to announce. Colby Rice is the author of the Ghosts of Koa series, which appeared on an earlier episode of the podcast. And we'll have a link to that book in the show notes, or that series in the show notes, so you can check it out. And also, I'll dig up or maybe Liz will dig up the episode that she appeared in, her story. I remember that. It's one of the many that stood out as being really awesome. And so, yes, I'm excited. Thank you so much, Colby, for supporting the podcast.
Yeah. Yay for Patreon.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in toward the end, but we have some other announcements as well. And Liz, you headed up a colossal effort for something that people have been asking for a while.
Several people have asked us for an index of the podcast episodes and the topics discussed so that you can have a look and say if you're looking for other stories that are the same genre as yours, or if you're writing a short story and want to listen to episodes that feature short stories or that tackle certain types of writing and editing challenges. So we've put together a spreadsheet that has all of those things outlined. And you can go to writership.com/index, I-N-D-E-X, pop your email address in there, and we will send you access to a spreadsheet that lists all of the writership episodes and all of their contents and the topics that are talked about, and you can check out and find what you need in there.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that's been a long time request, so...
Yes, we'll put the link in the show notes, but it's writership.com/index.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So this last week, I attended the StoryGrid Editor Certification Training in Nashville, and it was an amazing experience. I can't stop talking about it in superlative terms. I've been quite giddy. I got to see some old friends as well as meet new ones, which is always awesome. And, you know, hanging out with kindred spirits and story nerds it's right up there with the top experiences in life for me. Sean Coyne, that is, and Tim Grawl, they put so much thought into both the content and our experience that I can't say enough good things about it. So if you ever get an opportunity to go to a workshop that they put on, they're top-notch events. And so two things happened. Well, many things happened, but big things for me happened as a result of the training. And the first is that I'm sort of experiencing a shift in my philosophy about the role of the editor in the author-editor relationship. And I've been pulling my thoughts together on that, and I'll be sharing that in the captain's blog. And the second is that I'm a certified StoryGrid editor, which is awesome. And I'll be talking more about StoryGrid related topics. So if you have questions about that, you know, stop by the podcast page and leave a question there. But also, I'll be talking about it in not just strictly StoryGrid terms, but terms that are more universal. So yeah, and the thing I really wanted to convey about the StoryGrid and what it does is that in editing, you know, so much of editing is intuition and gut feelings, and that's great, because when you're creating art, you're not necessarily wanting it to be mathematical, and you know, when you're in the creative process, it's more open and free-flowing. But feelings don't always help you decide what to do next, like how to move your manuscript from one level to the next and really improve things. And the StoryGrid actually is a clear way to quantify, essentially, an objective standard for stories, and so it helps you with very specific next steps. Anyway, I'll be talking more about that in the coming months, so you'll get more than an earful and blog posts full of that as we go along. So yeah, do you have a quote for us, perhaps, Liz?
I have two this week. We've got a double whammy of quotes.
Excellent.
For you this week. Our first quote comes from Joseph M. Williams and Gregory G. Colomb, and they say, It is important to express actions as verbs, but the first principle of a clear style is this: make the subjects of most of your verbs the main characters in your story. And our second quote comes from Constance Hale. And Constance says, whether you write short, punchy sentences or long, flowing ones, keep track of your subjects and predicates. Keeping track of your subjects and predicates can prevent your prose from shifting and drifting.
Okay. So to me, that's what's at the heart of intentional story construction. Sentence construction. And that, you know, long ago, I was really, you know, into correct grammar and doing everything, you know, usage, doing everything properly. And I still think it's important to be mindful about these things. But
of course.
Yeah. If for no other reason than, you know, the reader needs to be able to understand what you're saying. But as I have matured, I recognize that everything, every word, every comma, every, you know, every part of the story is in service of the story and the experience you want to create for the reader. And so commas and, you know, certain word choices and that kind of thing aren't always the biggest thing. In fact, rarely they are. But when you make intentional choices about your sentences and the way you put them together, then you're really every, you know, all of the meaning is being delivered and not being, you know, not some of it left on the table. And then the other thing I was thinking about is if you can get granular for a little bit and, you know, study the way that you structure your sentences, then it will become easier and it'll flow more. So that it's not like I'm going to ask you to analyze every sentence or diagram every sentence. No. But just if you spend a little, you know, a little investment up front, then it will pay off in a big way.
Yeah, it's that kind of study that can help you really up your writing game.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I guess we'll go ahead and jump into the submission for this week. We have the chapter one from The Left-Handed Gunslinger by Sean Gill. It's Western fantasy, which I think is a fantastic mashup. And Sean's target when he turned this in was 25,000 words. So we're talking novella length. And the amazing Liz is going to read the story for us today.
Thank you. Okay. Chapter 1, Girl, circa 1890. Marshall's pants were rolled up and his calves were submerged in the river. His suspenders dangled down at his sides and gently brushed his legs. He was hatless. He tied his brown hair into a mini ponytail behind his head, curled the tips of his handlebar moustache into small circles after stretching it out, and then pulled out two socks that were tucked halfway into his pants. He dunked them in the water several times and began scrubbing. The warmth of the sun dodged through the sparse defense of the clouds and laid across the ground. Marshall's extra clothing was pancaked against a boulder that resided at the top of a slope that led to a trail. At rest beside it was a coat that smothered his travel pack and most of his gun belt. The handle and trigger of his revolver poked out from beneath. Although the sun was warm on Marshall's skin, the water was cool as it rushed against his legs. A chill ran from the water up his body as a sudden rustle of dirt and leaves was heard from behind. Marshall whipped around and held his stance in anticipation of a ferocious animal that would trot toward him. A constant scraping came to his ears. It grew louder. He sloshed his way out of the river with haste towards his revolver. A girl came out beyond the trees while dragging a relatively straight tree branch behind her. She stopped as she looked at him standing at the bottom of the slope below eye level. Marshall turned away from the girl and continued his ever-important scrubbing. "What are you doing?" the girl asked in an uninterested tone. "That's a strange question coming from a girl walking a stick," Marshall said, but didn't turn to speak toward her. "It's not a stick," she said as she straightened her posture. "It's a weapon." She was wearing a plain cream-coloured ankle-long dress that she held above the ground with her free hand. There were no shoes on her feet. Instead, they were covered with semi-dried mud. Marshall chuckled as he turned back to wave one of his sopping socks at her. "You can hardly lift that thing. For something to be a useful weapon, you need to be able to defend yourself with it, to hold it in your hands." "I'd like to see you do better. I think you're just jealous that you didn't find it first," she said as she stretched her neck in a haughty manner. "Besides, nobody washes their clothes in the river anymore. You're the strange one." Marshall stopped and glared at her. "What's this?" she asked as she approached his coat. "Do not touch that," Marshall said as he reached through the air in a failed attempt to grab at her. She became wide-eyed at his outburst and stopped immediately. "It's dangerous. I don't want no kid accidentally shooting herself with my pistol. I couldn't live with that," he thought to change the topic. "What are you doing out here anyhow? Ain't nothing round these parts." He turned his back on her again. It seemed that it would be easier to casually chat with her without looking at her face. She hesitated. "We've got a cabin not too far from the river and a general store that Grandpa runs. Daddy said he's seen you out here last Monday. Recognized you because your right hand's missing that finger." She lifted her arm half-heartedly at it. "Said he used to chase you through the field near school when he was about my age. And he used to push your face in the dirt," she added. The trace of a smile was heard in her voice. Marshall swallowed what felt like a stone. He could picture her behind him with her mouth partway open, almost salivating, an appearance that seemed she was about to devour a tender steak. His blood boiled as he stared over the river at the trees on the other side that swayed gently. He disagreed with the kind wind and wanted to rip them from their roots. She smiled a little bigger. "Monday is wash day, and I figured you'd be out here again. I was right. Daddy says you're harmless." She paused as she narrowed her gaze at him, in possible anticipation of a response. But Marshall stopped listening after she mentioned face and dirt. She then gestured more confidently this time, now at his revolver. "I bet you couldn't shoot somebody if they were standing 5 paces in front of. Why don't you run and tell Daddy that you wandered off by yourself to talk to the strange man in the river, huh? Go on. Tell him you're being a dumb little girl. Maybe he'll knock some sense into you." Her eyes welled up, glossy orbs of tears. "My daddy wouldn't hurt me," she said with a quiver. "Well, maybe he should rethink that," he said, out of spite from her previous badgering. The girl stood her ground, but appeared as if all her determination, whatever she intended to do, was washed down the river. She barely held the tips of her fingers onto the end of the splintered tree branch. Her mouth hung open in disbelief as a single tear rolled off her round cheek. She bit her lip and tightened her fingers around the branch, then dragged it parallel to the river. Marshall watched. She walked away, but then turned the opposite direction. To Marshall's disappointment, she was only pacing the trail. He sighed. She began with a sniff. "He said he did it because of your stories," she said in a matter-of-fact sort of way as she looked anywhere but at him. "Not because you are missing a finger." Marshall pushed all the air from his lungs. "You gonna tell me about my own life now? Think I don't know? All them stories were lies." He threw both his socks into the mud, along with the effort he put into cleaning them. "How long are you going to be?" the girl asked. It sounded more like a demand. Marshall looked left and right. "What, is there a line behind you? You said it, ain't nobody washing their things in the river anymore." The girl leaned forward as she stared directly into his eyes. "No, here!" She drove a finger straight down toward the ground. How long are you going to be here? We don't want you living off our land. His face went slack. You don't worry about that. I ain't staying long. Never stayed long around people. They always disappoint, he said. Think I know why, the girl replied, as she matched his mellow tone. Marshall went silent as he waited for her to continue. She suddenly dropped the branch in front of her and shoved it down the slope with her muddy foot. "'Cause you're a loon!' she yelled before making a dash for his gun belt. The branch picked up momentum and almost seemed to bounce through the air several times as it headed straight for him. In a rush, Marshall backed up further into the river to avoid having his shins smashed by the now viable weapon. The branch splashed water all over after it charged through, then floated on the top of the river. Marshall hopped over it and ran up the slope to stop the girl. His gun belt was gone from beneath his coat and she was out of sight. Some dirt was cupped from the ground. Marshall knew exactly where she went. He pursued her footprints that wound past the thicket. They led him to a clearing where a single brown spotted cow stared back at him as it chewed some cud. There were too many cow prints to see where she had made her getaway from here, and she could not be seen in any direction. Marshall's gun belt was hanging from a tree branch high above, but he could make out that his revolver was missing from its holster. He passed the cow, patting it firmly as he did, and found a fresh pile of manure where only the hammer of his revolver poked out. He thought to say it out loud, but it spoke for itself.
Thank you. That was delightful. I loved hearing you do the voices because I'm not used to hearing you speak. Anyway,
speak cowboy.
Yeah.
Cowboy, I mean, with an English accent.
You're normally yourself, and so that was fun. Well, okay, and so. You know, when I think about this this chapter, this little scene that we have here, the way that this ends with he thought to say it out loud, but it spoke for itself. It to me, that was really great restraint. Like you could use the word there.
The word for manure.
Yeah, the four letter. Yeah, you could do that. But I think this is a lot funnier.
Yes.
You know, the way it's worded, I think that's pretty awesome. And we have some pretty funny elements in this throughout. And we had the prologue, it made the piece a little long to read, but the prologue, which we'll include in the show notes, is also funny. And Marshall is kind of a goofy hero. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny in an understated way as well. It's very subtle humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think gives it more power.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there was another thing I wanted to mention that I thought was really well done is that, you know, you don't necessarily want to give a long description of the person, you know, of the characters, but we got that in the opening of this scene. We get this bit about, you know, he tied his brown hair into a mini ponytail behind his head so we can kind of, you know, picture that. So we're seeing him through his actions. And then I thought this next bit was really well done, that curled the tips of his handlebar mustache into small circles after stretching it out.
You can see that very clearly in your mind's eye.
Exactly, without just, you know, a laundry list of, okay, this is what Marshall looks like. Because, you know, I mean, for one thing, in a tight third person point of view, you wouldn't, you know, he's not going to be thinking about the way he looks, but he might be thinking about the fact that he is twirling his, you know, stretching out and shaping his mustache. So mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done. So the things that I think would be a great step for this author with this story is to look at the the sentence construction. And what I noticed in reading this is that there's quite a bit of passive construction. And you're probably used to hearing talk about the passive voice, and it's been, you know, people are get the naughty finger in the face about the passive voice. Of course, we know there are times when you want to use the passive voice, and passive construction includes more than that. It includes making inanimate objects the actor in a sentence, and in a kind of it's something that draws attention to itself. So a couple of examples are, here, the warmth of the sun dodged through the sparse defense of the clouds. But an even better example of this, a constant scraping came to his ears. So instead of the character, Marshall, hearing a scraping, or just, you know, a reference to scraping, which you might do if you wanted a really tight narrative distance, we have the scraping coming to him. Now, that can be an intentional choice, and there are times when you might want to use that passive construction. In this piece, it's used often enough that it felt a little distracting to me. And so things like the trace of a smile was heard in her voice, you know, because Marshall is only understood in that sentence. He's not within it. And let me see if there are a couple other.
So where would you want to use that passive construction?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you want to change up the sentence structure because you've had Marshall did this, Marshall did that, Marshall, you know, like you don't want to have that repetitive sentence structure. And when you want to emphasize that, the particular object, so if the scraping were the most important thing and not the fact that Marshall was hearing it, then, you know, that's a perfectly good way to emphasize that.
Okay, so to provide variety in your sentence structure and to change the emphasis on the sentence.
Yeah, and then it affects your narrative distance, right? So I'll just work with this one because I've got it right here. So a constant scraping came to his ears. So we're not fully inside his experience there. We're kind of, you know, our position, essentially, our vantage point in relation to the point of view character is pretty far. We're not hearing it from inside his mind. And so if you want to extend the narrative distance, you know, that's another way. And then just generally for the passive voice, which we've talked about before, there are three main reasons that you want to use that. And they include when you want to avoid revealing who the actor is. So mistakes were made is a classic example.
Good politicians go to.
Right. Yep. That's a standard one. And when you want to, when you don't know who the actor is, right? So the example I have for that is, or they don't know or can't perceive who it is. So I was shoved from behind. Right. And then the final reason why this is not an exhaustive list, but these are examples, is when you might want to use this is when it doesn't matter, like the actor is irrelevant. So the cake was ruined. You know, we don't necessarily, it doesn't need to be the rain ruined the cake. necessarily, or the dog ruined the cake, or...
The important thing is that we have no cake.
That is the important thing. Yes. Yes. And the thing about which we must, get upset. Okay, so I'm glad we agree on that.
Yeah. But if you're not looking to do any of those three things, and if you're not consciously using the passive voice to try and do one of those three things, then you really ought to be trying to avoid it, right?
Yeah. And the reason for that is that when we're using a passive construction, either the passive voice or, instances when, inanimate objects are kind of doing things, then it's like a speed bump, and it kind of can pull us, if it's out of the ordinary enough, then it pulls the reader out of the story experience. And it also tends to use a lot more words, or take a lot more words to build that construction. And so that, that makes your story wordier, obviously. And it can be a little clunky. Exactly. So it's, if you don't have a specific reason to do it, I mean, you can do it, of course, every now and again because you like the sound of it and that kind of thing, that would be another fine reason. But you really want to think about the reader and how they're receiving it and if it's distracting.
Right.
Yeah. So just a couple of other things. Or actually just one other thing that I wanted to mention, which is just slightly different, is that we have a repetitive, repetitive construction, which is this, as he or she did something. So we have, for example, she said as she straightened her posture, Marshall chuckled as he turned back to wave. What's this? She asked as she approached his coat. And another one. She said as she stretched her neck, his blood boiled as he stared. And I don't want to belabor it. But that's one thing, we all have echoes and those, repetitive things that we say in speech. And they find their way into our writing as well. And so it's just one of those things that you want to be aware of. And actually, I found a resource recently with a macro that you can create in Microsoft Word you can use it to hunt for your crutch words and phrases. And you run it through your manuscript, and it actually takes those phrases out and puts them in a separate document, which I'm not sure exactly why that would be helpful necessarily. But the point is it helps you identify those things once you know what your special words are. And I'll include a link to that article because I think – once you're used to spotting them, it's going to get easier to spot them.
I think for most writers, once they see them, it's relatively easy to turn the sentence around, to restructure it. But the trick is being able to spot it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And so, as you're reading it, it's your story. You're going to, fall into... enjoying it, hopefully, or you've read it so many times that you're kind of getting, I'm done with this. And so having an extra tool to spot those is really helpful.
Yeah.
So I'll pull that and we'll get that in the show notes. It just so happens that I have an editorial mission to help with intentional sentence construction.
How about that?
and you might not like it, but I'm gonna I'm going to give you a gentle nudge, not just you, Liz, everybody. No, I'm going to give everyone a gentle nudge, because you will learn so much about the way you write by doing this. And it's a little work up front, but, you know, it's all part of the craft of writing and getting better, right? These are the tools of our trade. And so we want to
push through the resistance is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Push through that. Okay. No matter where you are in your work in progress, whether you have a raw first draft or something that's ready to go to press, I want you to select a 5-page sample to analyze, preferably a passage you haven't reviewed recently. Now, if you're pressed for time, you can, you know, take a shorter sample. But the point is to take that out of, you know, outside of your regular document and paste it in a new document. And you can print it, you know, obviously do a hard copy, old school hard copy, or do it digitally. But I want you to read that entire sample really, you know, quickly the first time through. And then I want you to go sentence by sentence, and I want you to mark the subject and the predicate for each one. Now, just as a reminder, the subject, right, is the person, place, or thing or idea that is being or doing something in the sentence. And the predicate or the verb expresses the doing or being.
So for those of us who are not editors, mm-hmm. if your sentence is, say, Marshall picked up the gun, mm-hmm. Marshall would be the subject as opposed to the gun.
Yes. Yes.
And the predicate would be the picking up.
Yes.
There you go.
And the gun is the object, but that is beside the point. That's just for your own edification.
Thank you.
But I want you to go through, identify those. And you might, you know, if you're doing a hard copy, you could use different colors or use a circle and a square. And if you're doing it digitally, you can highlight different colors or use underline and bold or, you know, whatever you like. But the point is to differentiate them. And then I want you to look at them, you know, look at the subject and ask yourself, is that the main actor? Is that the in the sentence, you know, is it a character doing something? And then is the predicate the main action in the sentence, or is it something that's kind of happening on the side? And if it is not the main actor in the sentence or the main action that's going on there, then I want you to think about whether there's a good reason for that to be the case. And, you know, we went through those, the things that are good reasons. You know, you're wanting to emphasize a particular object, or you're wanting to indicate that we don't know who the actor is. You know, any of those reasons are completely legitimate. So if you don't have a legitimate or a good reason for it, then I want you to rewrite the sentence. And this is, you know, if you have a draft that you're ready to hit publish on and you're moving forward and you're just doing this because Leslie suggested it, then, you know, then chalk it up to this is just a great exercise for you to work on and for you to, you know, to continue to grow in the craft. But if you're in an earlier, if you're in an early like raw draft, then, you know, then kind of set that aside for after you, you know, once you're looking at the sentence and paragraph level and after you have done, you know, story level edits. If you're in the copy
edit. Because this is copy editing type things.
Exactly. This is the, you know, you're looking at the language. Your story is already solid. Your scenes are already all working. And you're just diving into how am I telling the story. So those are all the different ways you might use this. And then, you know, once you've rewritten that, your sample, then I want you to set it aside for a couple of days and then come back to it and read it and see how you feel about it. And if you have an alpha reader or a beta reader, who can look at it, like get their feedback too, if that feels supportive and helpful, because that'll help you understand what's the change that's going on there and how is it working? So if you have to change several sentences, it can feel kind of overwhelming, but don't be discouraged. Just try it for go through it 4 to 7 times. And my guess is that when you have gone through it that many times, that you will start to integrate and internalize that. And you'll be not only be able to spot it when you're editing, but you'll start to not use that passive construction as often. So, yeah, that's the editorial mission.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's a little tough. So be gentle.
It is, but it's one of those that can not just improve your work in progress, but it's going to up your game as you continue to write, as you move forward. You're going to, like you said, get used to writing sentences without that passive construction, and it's going to improve your writing as you move forward.
Yeah, exactly. So a reminder that you can find the editorial missions in the official show notes, and in the same place, you can sign up to have those editorial missions delivered to your box personally by Liz. She sends all of those things to you individually. And so that's a great solution if you normally listen while you're on the go.
And remember, the podcast is sponsored by Jim Cookrell from the Author Marketing Club. Jim just launched his new service for authors called Happy Book Reviews. We all know that books with more high-quality reviews sell more copies. HappyBookReviews.com is a service where Jim hopes to make your book happy with reviews. Check out the options at www.happybookreviews.com, because nobody likes a sad book. You can make your book happy with reviews.
And Jim Cookrell and the Author Marketing Club cover hosting and technical support for the show, but our Patreon crew supports our time in preparing and putting this on. We have a new reward for the quartermaster's level, and we're calling it the Writership Podcast Book Club. Of course, this is not just any book club. Each month, I'll choose a book from your suggestions and read it and analyze it the way I would for a diagnostic story level edit. And then we'll discuss it in a recorded call so you can get to know genres and global story structure by looking at stories that are working really well. So I'm excited to do that. We're going to start that in October. And so if that is of interest to you, you can stop by patreon.com/writership. And if you enjoy the show and find it useful, we'd be so grateful if you'd leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. There are handy instructions for this on the website. Or you could recommend the show to a writing friend. If you want to have your 5 pages reviewed, please visit www.writership.com/submissions. That's it for episode 113. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.